Good evening. This is KGBM 95.9 on your dial FM from Bozeman, Montana. And this is the Meditation to Self-Realization Show. I'm Jim, and Marion's not here. Marion, she went to India. She went to India to O&O Academy to do what they call tapas, which is a 1 month. She's going to be gone for a month, and she's doing some deep meditation, silent meditation, and I'm sure she's going to get a lot of self-realization. In fact, I got an email from her, not an email, but a text message, and this is her first day. She goes, "It's all very real, no dream, more like a recent dream come true. Have had very meaningful connections with so many beautiful people along the way and while here. Soul connections with and beyond stories and words. Easy, endearing, and extremely moving experience. It meets my need for quality connections." That was just her first day. So that was just amazing. Then they got pampered. She got a little massage at the Palace Hotel where she's staying at. And they did a yoga mob. She joined a yoga mob on Yoga Day, you know, International Yoga Day. And she even took a wild ride. She goes, "We rode in a tuk-tuk open vehicle yesterday. It was wild. I laughed most of the way. Had to close my eyes to be able to breathe. Did a yoga mob here in Palace yesterday. And today I go for my 90-minute massage. I love you." And when she says I love you, she loves you too, who's ever listening. So that's going to be quite an experience. So I thought I'd do something different tonight. And so this is an interview with Prithiji, and it's done by another interviewer called Kerwin Ray. And I just want to play it because it's all about the power of intuition, talks about meditation, why some people have difficulties wanting to meditate, and there's simple ways to get into it. So I thought it would be very, very nice to listen to tonight. And so here we go. This is an interview with Prithiji by Kerwin Ray.
Prithiji, thank you so much for joining us for our podcast. It's great to have you here in Australia.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
No, you're welcome.
It's great to have you here. Be here and to be part of your podcast.
Fantastic. Well, listen, before we start, I thought it would be nice for me to share my experience with the One World Academy, because I know the One World Academy with yourself and your husband is, you know, it's spreading rapidly around the world, and you're affecting change, you know, in many countries and people and families all over the place. And I have very fond memories of my introduction to One World and the Oneness Blessings. Back in 2009, one of your students, or I think it was one of your, like, what do you call it?
The faculty.
One of the faculty. Yeah. Diksha? No. Dasa.
Dasa,
one of your Dasas, came to Sydney, and they did an incredible discourse for us, where there was maybe 15, maybe 20 of us in a room. And he came in and he was wearing this beautiful white robe. And I swear to God, when he came in, he floated in the room. He was just almost walking on a cushion of air. And he was so happy. He had this look of peace and joy on his face from the moment he arrived. What was amazing is he had a really bad flu. So he was really sick, but he was still really content and really happy. And he sat at the front of the room in a chair, exactly like you're sitting right now, took his slippers off before he got on the chair. And he spent the first maybe 15 to 20 minutes of the discourse not saying a word, just looking at everybody. And I remember for the first maybe minute or so, I was like, what's going on? Like, isn't he supposed to be talking? And then after about a minute, I was like, okay, I understand. Like, he's just observing. Like, he's just observing. And it was amazing to see the different reactions in the room, because I was sitting in the front row and I'm having a little bit of a look around. And, you know, some people were very uncomfortable in the silence. You know, and some people were, you know, judging the silence, and others were wondering what was going on, and very few people were really, under, you know, at peace in the silence. And then for about 20 minutes, he started to speak, and he spent maybe, it was a good 2 hours sharing his philosophies about life and love and spirituality, yeah, and, you know, the metaphor of the internet and connectedness. And then at the end of it, he invited us to receive a blessing, the oneness blessing that you guys talk of. And the incredible thing was, he said, look, this blessing that I'm about to give you, we've actually observed the brain and how the brain operates under fMRI. When we give these blessings, and we observe that the parietal lobe slows down and the frontal lobe start to become more active, and explained how, which for most people who are listening who may not know this, you know, he explained that the parietal lobe is the part of the brain that is responsible for us feeling separate from the world. And he, you know, he related it to, you know, when we feel separate, and then you apply beliefs and perhaps, you know, extreme perspectives and values on top of that, and you have two that are in opposition, that can create levels of conflict, and at, you know, at higher levels culturally and at country level could be even war. So he said, the reason we call it the oneness blessing is because this part of the brain starts to slow down and your frontal lobe starts to become more active, and you start to feel more connected and less separate from your world. And I remember thinking, wow, that's incredible. So I said, I'd now like to give everyone their blessing. And so I was front row. He goes, everyone close your eyes. And so I'm like a five-year-old at the best of times. So he told me to close my eyes, and I was peeking out the side to see what he was doing. And he started down the end of the row, and he, you know, he was, the chanting and the music was playing, and, you know, he was giving his blessings. And then I kept on peeking out the side of my eye, and then he got to me. And then as he got to me and he started to bless, I started to hear a quiver in his voice. And I opened my eyes, and I saw that his hands were shaking a little bit, and I remember thinking to myself, his hands weren't shaking for anybody else. What the hell's going on? And then all of a sudden, I remember feeling like a deep sense of peace. And I grew up, I had a very fortunate upbringing where my mother introduced me to, you know, to physical healing and energetic healing at a very early age. And so I've had a lot of experience with, you know, with energies and healers, and, you know, to be able to feel a blessing like that was quite actually incredible. But where it got interesting was the very next day. It was 8 o'clock in the evening. The very next day, it was 2 minutes to 4 o'clock. I had just got home from a workout. I was going into my house, and I was working from home at the time. This was February 24th, 2009. So that was February 23rd.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, I was talking to my PA, and she looked at me and she said, Cohen, I think you need to sit down. And I was like, why? She goes, you need to sit down. And then I started to talk, and all of a sudden, I started to lisp. And I looked down, and my face started to collapse. My mouth opened, and I just had drool just came pouring out of my mouth onto my chest. And I was just like, I looked at it, and the first thing I could do was actually laugh. I actually laughed. I looked at her, and I laughed. I was like, I had drool pouring down my chest. And she's like, oh, my God. And she says to me, you're having a healing reaction from your blessing last night. Sit down and ground yourself. And so I crouched on the ground. And I went to put both my hands on the ground, and I remember putting both my hands on the ground. She's saying, you need to ground yourself, put your hands on the ground. And I put what I thought were both of my hands on the ground. And I remember feeling with my right hand, it was very cold. And my left hand, it was very cold. But then all of a sudden she starts yelling at me saying, put your left hand on the ground. And I looked up, and my left hand was actually up here, and it was twisted. And then I laid down, and everything went completely quiet. And I was maybe unconscious for what felt like 30 seconds.
Okay.
And during that time, and this is where it gets a little bit weird. Not only did everything go dark, but all of a sudden, I literally felt like I tapped into the mobile phone network. All of a sudden, I heard multiple conversations overlapping one another, and I could hear one dominant female voice. Although I was unconscious, I wasn't unconscious. I could not see, but I could still hear and talk. And so my PA was going, I'm going to call an ambulance. I could hear her saying, I'm going to call an ambulance. And I said to her, don't call the ambulance. Listen. She says, listen to what? I said, listen to the voices. And she's like, I'm definitely calling it. I said, no, just listen. And I could hear these voices, and it was incredible because I couldn't actually hear what was being said, but I could hear all these conversations overlapping on one another. And I literally thought to myself, oh, my God, I've tapped into the phone networks. And then that went very quiet, and I went into a new place. And this new place that I went to, everything I thought about made sense. Like every question I'd ever had was answered. And I know how unusual this can sound, but I literally felt like I had tapped into something so much greater than myself. And I've got an interest in quantum mechanics and particle physics. I've got an interest in spirituality. And when I started to think about not only just the meaning of life and the purpose of life, but when I started to think about, you know, even complex equations from quantum mechanics, everything was just coming to me. And I'm very careful to say, but I felt like I had a complete understanding. And then I got taken to another place, and this other place that I went to, I was presented with a choice, and it wasn't a verbal choice. It was just a choice that I was aware of, and the choice was you can stay or you can go.
Okay.
And I remember at the time thinking, you know, we've all lived many lives, but in this life that I've been in, I have really lived many lives. Like I've enjoyed so much experience. I've lived so much in this vessel that I've had. And I remember thinking to myself, if I died today, it wouldn't be a dishonor. It wouldn't be a shame because I've already lived so much. And I remember thinking without attachment, I'm actually ready to go. And as soon as I said, I'm ready to go, my eyes opened and I was awake. And my PA was there and she's crying. I'm lying on the ground. She's got one head over my head, one head over my chest, and she's crying. And I got up and I took a few steps and I stumbled. And the short version was I get taken to hospital. Okay. And at first they thought I'd had an epileptic seizure. And then they gave me a CT scan. They said, well, nothing's wrong with you. And they're about to send me home. And then an Indian doctor comes in and he goes, we're just going to send you for an MRI just to be sure. So they sent me for an MRI just to be sure. And then he came back and he goes, it appears that you've actually had a stroke. And I was like, okay. He said, you've had a two and three quarter centimeter stroke in your parietal lobe, in your brain. And I was like, oh. I was like completely. And he goes, can you think of any reason why this would have happened? I said, well, there was this Indian dude. And I tried to share the story. And the doctor's like, didn't want to have a bar of it. And the miraculous thing was, for the next 2 weeks in hospital, the doctors were trying furiously to find out why I had this stroke. But what was interesting is I knew why I had the stroke from the very beginning. And you know, and I don't want this to necessarily, this is not about a warning for anyone. This was about understanding that the gift that was given to me was a great one. And from the moment that it came on, I knew it was a gift. Like I knew it was a gift that was given to me by the blessing that I received. So the moment it came on, I didn't resist it. I didn't fight it. And then for the 2 weeks in hospital, I let the doctors do their things and try and work it out. And they couldn't work it out. There was no explanation for the stroke whatsoever. But what was interesting is over the next, they said to me that I probably wouldn't be able to work for at least 12 months or more. I was back doing what I do 6 weeks later. And I always used to, before I'd start a presentation, I always used to leave like 20 minutes at the beginning of the presentation where I'd have nothing planned and I'd just get up there and I'd tune into the audience and I'd allow whatever to come through me to come from the audience to just be of service. And 6 weeks later, I was back on stage and I started to share. And all of a sudden, things started coming from me and I had no idea where it was coming from. Like there were things that came out of my mouth. And as I'm saying them, I'm thinking to myself, I don't even know where this is coming from. I have no idea. And over about 9 months, I started to document all what was coming out. And it wasn't until maybe 6 months later that I realized that what was coming out of me was the realizations that I'd had while I was actually having the stroke. And it was an incredible experience. And so I haven't really had, I've shared this story with many people all over the world, but I haven't actually had the opportunity to share it with anyone from the One World Academy. So, you know, from my heart to yours, that stroke was fundamentally one of the most important experiences in my life that changed the trajectory and the direction of not only my life, but my spirit, my soul. And so I'd like to take this opportunity to say
How has it changed you as a person?
Well, what's interesting is I'm a lot more aware now. Like I've always had a level of awareness, or I've always been, I was exposed to consciousness at an early age. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been, you know, developing a level of awareness. But since the stroke, I'll give you a great example. I lost for the 2 weeks, almost a month in hospital, I had a 15-second memory. Uh-huh. And I lost the ability to communicate properly.
Oh.
So every 15 seconds, someone would hit the reset button and I'd forget what's just happened, right? Okay. And I'd have problems communicating. And so what I started to do is when people came to visit me in hospitals and the doctors and the nurses came in, they would talk to me, but I knew within 15 seconds, I was going to forget what they said. And so I stopped listening to people and I started feeling people. Okay. So I started listening, not with my head, I started listening with my heart. And, my mother's a clairvoyant and a psychic, so I've always felt like I've had a bit of a gift when it comes to intuition and feeling, but I felt like the stroke just accelerated it and just opened up this waterfall of intuition that now serves me every single day. And I'm very grateful for the work that you guys have done because, you know, it's certainly touched my life.
Amazing. I didn't know this.
No. Well, I was a little bit worried to tell you because I was like, well, geez, how do we, you know, we're starting a conversation. Well, you gave me a stroke. But it was beautiful. It was really a beautiful experience.
We've never heard of giving a stroke, but yes.
But it's incredible. It's incredible the power of a healing, but as long as we don't interpret the healing in the wrong way, because a lot of people interpreted my stroke as being bad, but from the moment it happened, I knew it wasn't bad. I knew it was a blessing. I knew it was a healing and it was giving me something great. So for those people who are probably intrigued at home now thinking, oh, my God, what is this One World all about? Why don't you tell us what the One World Academy is all about?
coming from your experience, it has made you into a better human being, a human being who can connect, who can love more, who is not in oneself feeling separate and alienated from the world. Just as we began this whole conversation, as you're talking about your relationship with your kid, it's amazing. But not many people share that experience with the children.
Mm.
So it's about not feeling separate. It is about feeling connected. It is about living in a beautiful state so you can create a beautiful life for yourself and create a beautiful life for your loved ones.
Mm.
So it's a wisdom and philosophy school. It is coming together of a direct experience and liberative wisdom. So we can transform and revolutionize one's experience of life.
That's beautiful. And how did One World Academy originate?
We have a tradition of being part of the spiritual oneness. Krishnaji is son of the founder of Oneness. And we had an experience as a family about 8 years ago. So 2008 is what we're talking. And it was an experience where we met with an accident, but it was not a bad one. We emerged safe from the accident. And in that experience, in that accident, there were so many questions that got answered for my husband. And he was able to see the actual reason why humanity was suffering. From that experience started One World Academy. It's a solution for humanity's suffering. Because in that experience, he was able to see that humanity suffer not because of others, not because of some circumstances. It can trigger stress in us, but we continue to live in that state of suffering because of a preoccupation with oneself.
Mm.
And he was able to see it so clearly when we met with that accident.
Wow.
That it was that constant preoccupation with oneself was causing him so much of pain. And there was a way out to live free of that suffering. Because when you live in suffering, when anyone lives in suffering, we only perpetuate suffering.
Mm.
When we are living in stress, we only perpetuate stress. There is another way to live life.
Mm.
To live life from a beautiful state.
It was Buddha who said it beautifully. He said, life is painful, but suffering is optional.
Suffering is definitely optional.
Yeah.
It's a choice. And this entire philosophy that is developed is around yourself and how much the preoccupation with yourself is separating you from the rest.
Yeah, right.
Separating you from the world, separating you from your family, separating you from the community that you live in.
That's beautiful. So you and your husband, Krishnaji, you aim to free people from unhappiness and suffering. So how do you do that?
The first important insight or realization is that we live only in two states. Forever, humanity has lived only in two states, and there is no third state. One is a stressful state, and other is a no-stress state and a beautiful state. To know that we are either living in this or that, it's a huge revelation because you need to make a choice in life. Whether you want to continue to live in a stressful state, causing greater suffering and pain to others, or you want to live in a beautiful state. So what we do is a combination of a wisdom, liberative wisdom, wisdom that has a feeling of freedom at the end of it, that can free you from suffering, and also direct experience. Direct experience, the one that you had. A space of deep calm, a space of connection that you experience. It's an experience, it's a direct experience of a great insight, a great realization that becomes yours. It is no longer somebody else's insight. It is no longer somebody else's experience, but it becomes yours. And it revolutionizes the way you feel, whether you feel separate or you feel totally connected to everything that is around you.
What do you think is the problem with the separateness? Why is separateness a problem?
If you go back to our own lives, you go back to yours or mine, when you're angry, when you are hurt, when you are feeling suffering from loneliness, when you're stressed, there is no place for the other in your life, in your world, in your inner world. You're feeling totally disconnected from all that is happening around you. as long as you're living in the state which is limited, which is stressful state, there is no way that even your child is present for you in your life. Only when you're able to break through from that state and move into a beautiful state, everybody comes alive.
So you talk about this beautiful state and you make consciousness sound so attractive. How do you define what this beautiful state is?
Beautiful state is a state where you're totally present to others. It is a state of feeling connected to everything around you. It can be an expansive state where you can feel the entire universe.
Is that what we refer to as enlightenment?
Yes, being one with everything.
Okay.
It's an enlightened state. Or it can be a state where you can actually feel your child, not feeling very separate. It ranges. But it's a state where you're feeling totally present to everything around you. And you're not living in a state of chaos, not living in a state of conflict, not living in a state of stress.
And what do you think stops people from experiencing this beautiful state?
We have not, as a civilization, we have not brought attention to our inner state. We have not, the life is moving so fast. We are caught up in doing. And the being is so much neglected. If we start bringing attention to our being, and if we start seeing where we are living, from which state we are living, then there is a natural tendency to move out of the stressful state into experiencing beautiful states. But the problem is, the entire focus is only on doing, and so much less on the being. But if your being is transformed, if your consciousness is transformed and it expands to include others, then your thinking gets transformed. There's no chaos and confusion in your thinking. And then your actions are decisive and you're powerful. Powerful enough to help and impact others and create greater good for this world.
Why do you think, everyone's got a perspective on where the world is at right now. You know, some people think that, you know, when we've never been closer to complete and utter chaos, and others think that we're on the verge of, you know, a cataclysmic, you know, evolution of consciousness. But in terms of where we are, regardless of how people perceive it, when we look at suffering in the world, why do you think people suffer? Do you think it's a perspective? Do you think it's a situation? Why do you think suffering is present still in the world?
I didn't get your question.
We have suffering?
Yes.
Some people suffer?
You're talking about suffering. You're talking about problems. You're talking about challenges.
Challenges, but it's more the perspective that people take. Because for me, I've always looked at it, not always. For a long time now, since I've been on the journey of my own, you know, my own self-awareness, I've started to realize that suffering is a perspective. You know, because you can have two people in the same situation, and you can have one person that is, you know, completely grateful and feeling totally blessed and connected with whatever is happening in their world, and you can have someone right beside them experiencing the same situation and experiencing resentment and hate and blame and guilt and shame in the exact same situation. The only difference is the two people. So I'm curious to know from what you guys do with One World, why, you know, because some people say, you know, if there was a God, you know, there would be no suffering. And in my life, I believe that suffering is an important ingredient in the evolution of our consciousness, because without pain, how do we wake up? So I'm curious to know from your perspective, or the One World perspective, is what do you think the purpose of suffering is?
I don't think from One World perspective, there is no great purpose for suffering, because when we look at people who are suffering, they're not creating greater good for the society. But it is only people who are moved away from suffering, who are living in a beautiful space, who are living in a space of joy and happiness, creating greater joy and happiness to people around. Why suffering? Is because you've not brought attention to your inner world. For us, suffering is the continuation of the inner dialogue once the event is over, once the challenge is over. But you continue living in that state with this inner dialogue of blaming yourself, blaming the other, blaming the system. Mm-hmm. There's so much of anger, so much of hate that is being cultivated. And we don't bring attention to that inner state. And it continues. And for few people, we've been working with people for so many years, continues for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop with a lifetime. It continues for generation. Because we not only inherit, we not only give to our children the financial inheritance, but also the emotional inheritance.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We epigenetically transfer our state to our children.
Yeah, I believe that.
And it is very important that every one of us decide to live in a beautiful state, not in a suffering state, because it's important that we create a wonderful generation future for the future.
But do you think suffering is important? Because for me, I look at it, without suffering, why would we look for something else? You know, I think, again, it was Buddha who said the greater the pain, the greater the awakening. And
awakening has to happen, right?
Yeah.
What about wallowing in suffering and living in that state of suffering, not getting out of it?
Which, as you said, some people do. But do you think suffering and pain play an important role in the awakening of an individual? You mentioned yourself that your husband had an accident, and it was through the accident that the One World was born.
Actually, we have people asking us, like, what is your greatest suffering? It was just a moment of an accident where he was able to bring attention to how suffering was continuing.
Right.
It is a matter of insight. But we don't believe in one person needing to have lived in suffering or lived a lot of life in suffering in order to experience beautiful birth. Let me share with you. We as a couple live, it is very important for us to create a generation which can help and support and who can be compassionate and loving. I don't think Loka, my 13-year-old, has suffered a great deal.
Understood.
But she's an amazing individual.
Yeah.
An individual who can connect, an individual who can be kind, who can be loving, not in terms of values and ideas that we have tended to her. We have never done it. We have not asked her to be this.
Yeah.
But just with the experience of love and connection that she shares with us.
She reflects the environment.
Yeah. She doesn't need to suffer to be that person.
Yeah, understood.
You don't need to make her feel that, life is other way so that you have to live this way. No. Just that way of life is like, just be kind. Just be loving. It's definitely not a matter of ideals, because we don't believe in dinning in ideals in children.
Yeah.
Because it kind of creates so much of conflict within oneself, and that conflict only separates.
Mm.
There's no big deal about conflict.
Yeah.
It only separates you from the rest. So it is a way of life. It's a natural state where you can live in a beautiful state and you can love. You can be kind. You can be compassionate. You can create a difference in the world.
Yeah.
I don't think she suffered greatly. You can ask her.
Well, I think that's a great perspective, because, I think there is a lot of teachings out there. And again, I share with you what I reflect from my own experience, which is my awakenings, and I've had many, have come from numerous, painful experiences. I've had 7 near-death experiences, and every time, and the stroke was the last one, and every time I have something, it wakes me up that little bit more. But to hear your perspective, especially with a child who comes into an environment that they don't need to suffer in order to experience the beautiful state, that's going to be refreshing for many people to hear, because some people are probably in a situation right now where they haven't got pain, they haven't got suffering, but they would like to feel more connected. They would like to experience this beautiful state that you speak of. And, with some people telling them that pain is the awakening, they might be searching for pain in order to wake up, and wherein in fact they actually don't need it in the first place.
We hear great speakers talk, starting their life from a painful experience or a great deal of suffering that they've experienced as a child or something that has happened in their lives. Life need not be that way. Me, Krishnaji and I, we don't believe in, you need to be in suffering in order to be awakened.
That's refreshing.
Yes.
That's very refreshing. And a lot of people get a huge sigh of relief with that. So, obviously, to find this beautiful state, we do need to, we need to start with more awareness, but we need to slow down, at some point. So how do we slow down in a world that seems to be moving so fast and only appears to be moving even faster every day with technology and automation?
It's important to realize that life begins from within. Life begins from the state of consciousness, which is the edifice, which is the foundation for everything that we experience in life. If you want to create a beautiful life, it is important that we start to bring attention to our consciousness, start bringing attention to our thinking, to our emotions. And from that space, from that foundation of being in a beautiful state of consciousness, go ahead to create a beautiful life.
And what do you think, what is the role of self-awareness in finding the beautiful state.
Unless until you know which state you are.
Yeah.
Unless until you're able to bring attention to the moment of your thinking, to the moment of your emotions, you would never be able to break free of those states into experiencing beautiful states. It is not like trying to say you're here, you need to get there. But it is to say that you are here and there is a totally different way of experiencing life. And the stress dissolves as you start bringing greater attention to yourself.
And one of the processes you use for that is meditation.
Oh, yes.
Meditation.
One of the clear paths that we use is for meditation, because definitely we use liberative wisdom. For us, wisdom, the right wisdom, the liberative path is very important.
Yeah.
And what we see is when people do get back into their lives, it is important to hold the insight very clear in them, because they're able to see what is happening within them as it is arising. And meditation is the path.
Mm.
For us, the practice is about returning back to a beautiful state of consciousness.
So what does meditation mean to you?
For us, it means declutching from habitual negative states, or habitual negative thinking, or habitual stressful states, I would say. Because we, as kids, we grow up, we tend to live in one particular state of stress. We get back to that state of stress again and again. Few people experience fear more than the other. Few people experience sadness more than the other. Few people experience loneliness more than the others. But there is one state that we get back to again and again. And any challenge that comes up, we get back to it. Any challenge that comes up, we move into anger. Any challenge that comes up, we move to sadness and loneliness. So it's
important. The default.
It is, yeah, yeah. It becomes your baseline state and you move into it again and again. So it is important to use your awareness. It is important to use the meditation to make sure to see where you are. Because the states are very seductive. You have lived growing up with it. It's become an addictive state. You don't even know, but you're back there.
Yeah.
So it is important that you bring, you get centered, you know where you are, so you can move on with it.
That's beautiful. And look, I think for a lot of people, I did a post on Facebook the other day, like I've been meditating now, like as a practitioner for 20 years. And every now and then, still meditation feels like I'm just thinking about my problems with my eyes closed. And for some people, you know, they have different practices. You know,
yes.
I know for me, I started with guided meditations when I was very young, and then I started learning Vipassana in my early 20s, and then I moved into transcendental meditation maybe about five or six years ago now. And one of the biggest questions I get from people is, what type of meditation should I do? And I always start with the one that feels, you know, the one that feels right for you. But when you look at the meditation that you teach at the One World, I know with Vipassana, it's all about observation of self and body. And with transcendental, it's about, you know, focusing on a mantra and focusing the mind on the mantra. What is it that's unique about the One World method of meditation?
For us, Vipassana is about observing oneself. But we observe ourselves in the light of the insight. So it leads us to a state of freedom. So it is liberative in nature. So for us, the wisdom comes very closely to practice. It is about experiencing freedom. It is about experiencing liberation at the end of it.
Right.
So even the tiniest practice would be to move to a beautiful state. So it has not a goal, I would say. It leaves you in a beautiful state. A state of calm, a state of love, a state of peace. Or it could be an expansive state. An expansive state of bliss, of serenity, being one. For us, it's a progression. And the most, I would say, if you want to call it difference, yes. For us, meditation is about observing yourself in the light of an insight. We feel it is very important to observe in the light of an insight.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it's about moving away from the stressful states and activating the mid prefrontal cortex, where you start feeling expanded. And if you look at yourself, it is not when you're angry that your life is beautiful.
Yeah.
It is when you feel connected, life is beautiful. When you're having your sausage with your son, life is beautiful.
Yeah.
For us, we start even for us, meditation is just not about, it's not an end in itself. For us, meditation is about moving into a state which can impact life around us, which can impact your family, which can impact your kid, which can impact everybody in your organization.
And I actually got a question the other day that I answered on one of our shows called Hey Kerwin, where someone said, you know, what is the magic pill that I could give them that will help them drop into a deep meditation or deep state of meditation very quickly? And my answer was, well, you know, that's like going to the gym and saying, you know, is there any magic pill I can take in order to lift?
It doesn't happen that
way. Yeah.
There is some meditation that's happening. So if you look at meditation, you can classify it as concentration-based meditation.
Yeah.
Like you focus on a mantra or focus on your thing and separate everything else and the focus, you try to get back focusing on that thing. Or it's a flow-based meditation, like Vipassana, like start observing whatever's happening within you. For us, it's very important because it's important that we bring observation to our deepest, innermost thought and thinking and emotions in your consciousness. But there is also meditation as a happening. It happens for few people. It happens when you're fasting for several days. It happens when you receive, when you enter into a field, or it happens when you receive a diksha, or it happens when...
I sometimes actually feel like I'm meditating when I'm cooking.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And even sometimes when I'm in the garden and I'm gardening.
Yeah, separate. Yeah. Meditation is about bringing total attention to whatever is happening. Mm. Whether it is happening, your focus is within you, or you're doing something and the focus is there. Or you're relating to your family or your kid, the focus is there. But just doing it, being whole, and doing it completely.
My experience with meditation has become an incredibly important part of my life. And, you know, if anyone was to say to me, you know, what would be the top three things that you would do in order to, you know, create a superhuman life, like meditation would certainly be one of the most important things that I would say, if not the number one. Like, it's had such a fundamentally huge impact on my life. But I do get a lot of questions from people who say, you know, I try to meditate, but I always have these random things that just pop in my head, or my mind is really noisy, or, you know, there's always a distraction. What advice do you give to people who have tried to meditate and they've, you know, labeled themselves as someone who can't do it? Like, what do you say to those people?
We actually addressed, we have a practice called the Soul Sync Meditation that everybody, most of the participants, most of the students do it around the world. And the nice thing about that meditation, it is to answer this question, because many people are not able to focus, are not able to get themselves centered, and they feel a lot of noise because they're hearing it for the first time. The noise is always there. Yeah. But once you start bringing attention, you hear it much more than what you've heard it earlier. So this meditation involves step-by-step practices. Like, it involves breath. It involves movement. It kind of makes you centered, makes you feel that you can do it. And at the same time, leaves you in a space of feeling expanded. And you hold a vision for that day, whatever you want for that day or for that period of time in your life. So it's a beautiful meditation, but it involves techniques. Right. It involves like a step-by-step.
But it sounds like it's more physical. It involves more stimulation to focus.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we use touching of the fingertips so that you can get more centered. It gets you more calm. Then it's about a humming, which releases nitric oxide, which makes you more calmer. So it is like slowly, progressively leading you into a state.
So that's interesting. So when we hum, it releases nitric oxide.
Yes, yes.
And which makes us more calm.
Yes.
And I guess that's why the om is such a
powerful
hum. Okay, cool. So I know that you guys work with transcendental science and intelligence and heart. Can you explain how important has science been for One World when it comes to spreading your message to the rest of the world?
It is a lot of conviction for people because the activation of the mid prefrontal cortex is very ancient.
Yeah.
It's probably thousands of years old, where the ancient Indian sages have spoken about this, activating this part to experience enlightened states. But science is getting there. Science is right now speaking about activating the mid prefrontal cortex. They call it Brahmagarbha. We are calling it the mid prefrontal cortex, just to feel expanded,
yeah,
move you into a state. So science is coming there. Science is actually showing what is happening when we meditate, what is happening when we have this revolutionary insights in our lives. So it is just a empirical conviction, I would say.
Yeah.
And then,
because it does help people get their head around it.
Yes, definitely.
Because I know when I first started learning about meditation and Gautama Buddha, and I was reading about some of his philosophies and how he was sharing things that science have only just found out about in the last, 20, 30 years. And what I've discovered from my own experience is when we can provide science to people with the philosophy and the spiritual nature of what we're trying to present, it just enables them to grasp.
It becomes a reality. It's not like about trying to do something that they're not knowing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they actually know that this part of the brain, actually limbic system, gets shut down. You're not living in the states of fear, stress, and anger, but you're activating the beautiful part of your brain where you feel a sense of expansion, where you feel greater connection to everything around you. And even more deeper, those transcendental states where you feel being one with everything.
Mm.
It's about activating that part of your brain. And people, I think, get more convinced. They know it is. And there is a lot more awareness going on in terms of trying to live life differently. People are tired, very tired.
And they're looking for change.
Yes.
And when we talk about, a lot of people talk about manifestation, and they talk about the importance of meditation to help people align with their thoughts and their intentions in order to increase the probability of being able to manifest, either certain situations or outcomes. What role does manifestation or form play in the one world space?
Oh, it plays a huge space, because we believe a state of consciousness directly impacts what you want to manifest in your life.
Do you believe that our state of consciousness actually instantaneously affects our environment?
Yes, because it's not a disconnected and disjointed physical universe.
Yeah.
We believe it is disconnected. We believe you're separate and you're not part of this. But it's not so. And the separation between mind and matter is just an illusion. More you are in a beautiful state, more you're feeling expanded. You feel that the entire universe is coming together, rearranging itself into patterns to manifest your heartfelt intention.
So you believe it is possible for us to manifest?
Yes, it is possible. Intentions? Yes, and we have many people manifesting by living in a beautiful state of consciousness. It is not a positive thinking. It is not visualization, but it is your state of feeling expanded. See how you expand. I mean, there's no boundaries to expansion.
Yeah.
It is the entire universe.
It's limitless.
And it rearranges to manifest what you want.
It's interesting, because I've actually had some people say to me, like, so if I learn how to meditate, then I can create whatever I want. And they're almost like a kid about to sit on Santa's knee. But for me, I've always seen meditation as a way of affecting probabilities. And
yes.
So for me, I've always learned that nothing's ever certain, but our thinking can increase the probability of it.
You're not fighting with the universe. See, yes. If you're not fighting within yourself, if you're not conflicted, if there's not so much of noise and confusion that's happening within you, then you're not fighting with the universe. You feel the universe is very friendly and loving. And it would manifest what you feel is love and kindness.
And it's interesting, for some people, oftentimes when they set an intention to manifest something, they will manifest something different and from what they want, and they'll be like, well, I didn't order this. But what I've experienced is oftentimes we'll manifest
something that is needed for you.
Something that is needed,
yes.
But it's not necessarily what we wanted,
yes.
But it was actually what we needed in the first place.
Definitely. Because the universe
is like a universal joke, right? What were you going to say?
Like, the entire universe is coming together to answer what you need, even more than what you know you need.
So you talked about being limitless before. And when we talk about being a limitless being, what does that mean in the context of where you live?
Right now we can talk about being limited is being in a limited state, which is actually so detrimental to our own lives and lives of people around us. Living in a stressful state, actually that separates you from all that is around you.
Right.
If you look, actually, if you're able to bring attention to one moment of stress, of course, is not only to frustration that we experience in life, but it's also every state, like anger, fear, hurt, jealousy, they're all stressful states. Because when you are in that state, the entire experience of life is not beautiful. And when you are in that state, you feel so separate from all that is around. And you're limited.
Do you think it's possible to be stressed in a like an over-excited, happy state?
No, no? I don't think so.
Okay.
When you're pleasure-driven and obsessive, then yes.
Yes, okay, yeah.
But not when you're happy and joyful.
Happy and joyful. That's a great distinction.
Yeah.
So where do you believe wisdom comes from? Because, you know, I know from my own experience with the stroke and also just growing up with a mother who's a clairvoyant and a psychic, that, you know, wisdom can come from anywhere at any time and just show up. But in your world, where do you believe wisdom emanates from?
When you say my world, it's...
Well, from your perspective.
Okay. Wisdom arises when you're able to start seeing your inner world very clearly without being camouflaged with so many other things. But if you're able to bring such great clarity into what is happening, then an insight comes. Wisdom comes from that place.
Do you think there's this collective wisdom that just sits around us constantly, that if we quiet ourselves enough and we open our hearts wide enough, that we actually have access to, that is millions
of... You have a huge load of wisdom just set right here.
Right. So you believe it's in here?
In here. Right. And if you start observing...
I guess what you're saying is, because what's in here is out there and what's out there is in here, so there is no difference.
Yes, in that way, yes.
We're going to be screwing a few people's brains here. That's beautiful. So for someone who's maybe listening to this and going, you know what, I would like to experience more of a beautiful state. I'd like to experience, you know, more of a connected life. Like, where would you suggest someone to start?
We can start with meditation. We have definitely practices at One World Academy, which is available. It's available online. So if they want, they can access that. But meditation is a beautiful tool to start with. It's not a lifestyle. It's becoming a lifestyle. But if you start meditating, if you start living life from a more beautiful state, which we call a no stress state, the entire life changes. Mm-hmm. Because the experience is not the same. The same water that we drink from a cup is very different from what it was earlier. The experience of life is very beautiful.
And what would you suggest, actually, what's one thing that people can practice or do no matter where in the world that they are to enhance their meditation? You've suggested it's a great place to start.
Yes.
And so for people who haven't done it, like there are things that they can do and there are apps that they can learn or download to learn. But for people who perhaps have started the practice of meditation and maybe doing it a few times a week or maybe even a few times a day, is there anything that you can give people as perhaps a suggestion to enhance the meditation, even if it's only just a small tweak that you've discovered, you know, through your own journey?
There is a practice called the Serene Mind Practice, which all of our students practice it. So whenever you feel not good, not physically, within yourself, whenever you feel you're moving into anger, a place of stress, you just need to do this practice and it doesn't take longer than 3 minutes. And as you do it, at the end of it, you feel you're more calm and more present. I don't know if you want us to do it now or if you want me to leave now, or they can just access whatever is fine.
Yeah, would you like to do one now?
Yeah, that'll be perfect.
Sure, yeah.
Close your eyes. Bring attention to your breath. Inhale and exhale, deep and slow. Identify the exact emotion that is arising within you right now. Is it fear, anxiety, irritation, frustration? Or is it joy, calm, peace, love, or connection? Paying attention to the moment of your thinking. Are you engaged with your past? Or are you engaged with your future? Or are you in the present? Observe yourself. Are you preoccupied with yourself? Or are you feeling connected? Do not try to change anything, just observe. Now imagine a flame glowing in the middle of your forehead. See this flame moving to the middle of your skull. Gentle smile to your face. Open your eyes whenever you're ready.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, that's the end of the show. A nice, beautiful way to end it. I hope you had a really nice meditation. And we'll be back next week. This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial, FM in Bozeman, Montana. Oh, I have to sing you a little tune. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. Guide your way on. Guide your way on. See you next week.